You're just saying.
Whatever you want, sir. Okay. Yeah, because we're limited on time anyway. Welcome, everybody, to the safety committee meeting Tuesday.
Recording in progress.
2023. Debbie, call the roll, please.
Narducci? Grindell? Verberka?
Thanks for coming, everybody. Light agenda, but we're on a timeframe, so we had a couple other things on the agenda, and we kind of removed one for a different time because we have to be done by 5:15 because planning commissions tonight. Debbie needs a couple of minutes before that starts, so with all due respect, I'll turn it over to Chief and we'll go through the agenda.
I'll go quick. First and foremost, golf carts. As you can see up there, I found a nice golf cart background. It's very nice and classy. We've had some residents come and speak on golf carts and us being able to inspect them as a police department so that they may obtain a license plate for that, which is covered in the ORC. The ORC already allows golf carts to operate on certain streets that are under 35 miles an hour, as long as they have a license plate. This form, which was approved by Greg O'Brien, would allow me to check a resident's golf cart. Resident is all we are looking for to do. There's a $20 fee for somebody who's not a resident, but we are not going to be allowing that in the ORC, or ORD, that Greg O'Brien will be getting together and having voted on in March. Once it's voted on in March, this will be the form. A resident can come, make sure it meets all safety standards. They take this form and they buy their own license plate from the BMV so that it's a certified vehicle per the ORC standards.
So I'm not sure exactly what you mean by this. So when you say we're going to be approving something in March, is there a
ordinance
to allow inspections or
yes.
to allow riding?
No, an ordinance to allow inspections.
Okay.
So the ORC already permits driving. This ordinance would allow us to inspect them so that they can get a license plate. Anybody have questions on that?
Questions along that line. So then what will the approach be for someone that is driving a golf cart that doesn't have a license plate on it?
So it'd be an illegal vehicle. We'd stop them and perhaps educate them, you know, tell them that they need to get a license plate and how to obtain one. If they are a persistent problem or they're driving in such a reckless fashion that, you know, then they would receive citations. Every circumstance is different. I think luckily we have very intelligent officers here that can provide a level head to make sure that each situation is either a citation or a conversation. I don't think everyone knows this, that you need a license plate for this type of item. So teaching them is sometimes the best.
Are you anticipating then putting information in the city newsletter and the post?
Yeah, we can add this once it's allowed, and we do make mentions of things like this on our Facebook page. So before the season hits, we would make a mention of, hey, by the way, if you do want it inspected, any golf carts do need license plates, something of that nature.
And the timing is perfect because it's spring, late spring, early summer.
Spring right now, Neil. Look outside. It's cold.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. After we bought that, there's another day and a half.
All right.
Get back to the season thing you just mentioned.
Yes, sir.
Are we going to have any kind of legislation that's going to make this a seasonal?
That would be up to you guys if you want to add anything further in the ordinance. The ORC does not break this down any further, except it allows it as long as they have a license plate.
It's permissive.
It's permissive as long as they have a license plate.
So we'd have to determine whether we want to have people and what streets. And I could see on some streets, but certainly not on state routes, you know.
From my knowledge, listening to you guys speak, that if it's 35 and under, you can't prohibit them from driving the car.
You can prohibit them if we made an ordinance doing so.
Yeah.
But the ORC does not prohibit them. So if you made a change and you made an ordinance, the city ordinance would take the effect over the ORC for that. So it's up to you if later you would be interested in doing that. The biggest thing was this form and allowing people to get licensed and recognizing that a licensed golf cart could operate. That's what one of our citizens who's come to our meetings has stated in the past, and we made sure we tackled that head on.
So I would want to see the, you know, on Brexler Road, Rockside,
Pleasant Valley,
and even Hillside.
So there's issues about getting from Spread Road, Brookside Road to Park if you can't go on 21. But
if you had to go on to get to something, get to another side street,
you can cross it
off crossing or for example, you have to get to, if you're on Spray and you wanted to get to what's the next street, Hillside?
Pleasant Valley.
Pleasant Valley before you get back in the side roads.
No, really, yeah.
Then you can't get from Pleasant Valley to Hillside through the side.
Well, you can't.
Then you're not allowed on Pleasant Valley.
That segment between Midland and
it's going to be tough.
We have not had any problems. Since I've only been here, you know, a year and a couple months. So I would, you know, also caution that, you know, if until we see, you know, maybe a increase on that or, you know, danger, if you want to get ahead of it, I understand, but we have not had any issues. Typically, they just stay within this area.
Yes, it's not an issue, but there's half a dozen people.
Right.
I think it could turn out to be an issue.
Unless you have a couple of things you'd have to do, turn your lights on, stuff like that, safety issues. If you're on 21, you'd have your lights on all the time, things like that.
Absolutely.
Is that a big issue if you have lights on all the time?
You could restrict them for hours.
No, in the previous meeting, you know, we discussed some of the limitations that were at other communities, such as whether it's day or night, no matter what road you're on, lights have to be on. We talked about, you know, the limitation in the wintertime. You know, maybe like November 1st to March 31st, to not be on, I mean, you could make it to not be on 21, you could make it to not be on, you know, 21 Pleasant Valley, Hillside, Chestnut. I mean, you know, to drive a golf cart where I'm at Eastview, you know, seven houses down in the wintertime, I don't think it's that big of a deal, you know, but, you know, as we discussed, like, it does make sense to limit the wintertime stuff, because as soon as people shut their brains off or looking for motorcycles and stuff like that, you know, and we're out there, you know, and that's why we don't go on 21 in the wintertime. You know, it's not, we don't go cruising in the wintertime.
We don't do that.
So, I mean.
I agree with Brad. I think it's a good idea to have it just seasonal, but have it start maybe April 1st through October 31st, maybe. But that's the main thing. You just need one accident, one catastrophe or anything, and that's
on all roads
or the main roads. I mean, right in the main roads, especially.
So although, are you, John, and I, you know, it's nice this Saturday, and we want to go to church, and we've got a golf cart, take the family on a golf cart, but it's February. Like, oh, we can't, because the city said, we can't do this until May 1st or something.
Let's get the ordinance introduced and see what we want to do.
But that's why I think it would be a great idea to, like, wintertime, you can stop 21. You can, I mean, even if you wanted to put, like, right off the rip, you know, Rockside Road, we don't drive the golf carts down to Rockside Road. But, you know, we do, you have a great point. You know, we do, when it becomes 50 degrees, because we live in Cleveland in the winter, you know, yeah, we'll go up and down Eastview, we'll go down to Midland, we'll go on family golf carts, but, I mean, I don't go out on Sprague or anything like that, you know, simply because people aren't looking for us.
So before we do this, I think that we need to sit and come up with a plan. I'm hearing all kind of different crazy things already. So,
the engineer involved.
So yeah. So before we go ahead and do this, people start coming to you for these, you know, to get their plates. I think council has to come up with a plan, a safety plan for these things. That's just my personal opinion.
I mean, to me, I would do the same thing you do as with campers and boats and stuff like that. You know, you're docked from what, May 1st to October 31st. You can do your boats. Oh, I mean, I got two golf carts, and I'm not going to be driving in the middle of wintertime.
you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go to.
You can't trust road conditions, I mean. And the hills are huge, because, I mean, some vehicles can't pull 21 Hill. There's no way a golf cart can pull that hill, I don't care how much power it's got.
Just for people, I mean, this is gonna become a big thing.
Sure.
I was at the boat show, and they have these carts, they're selling especially $12,000, I mean, they look, they're crazy. I mean, they're crazy. The guy said he had 10,000 of them, he had none left, he's not even going to the next show. How many he sold. So, golf carts are gonna become a big thing, and I think that we need to seriously look at how far we want it to go.
Your carts, does it have, is it gas, or does it have that new lithium?
Mine's gas.
So, these new lithium ones are, they're supposed to last forever. The battery life is.
They're decked out.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, with gas prices the way they are, people are gonna start driving these more often than they are their own cars, so there's gotta have to be some restrictions.
So the next meeting, you want recommendations on the streets and when to operate?
Well, it's not gonna be this meeting, but I think next meeting, just sit down and come up with a plan.
Because they can, as I said, the ORC still allows them, like tomorrow, they can be driving on the streets. This is just more of an effort to make sure we're trying to get people licensed. So
they can drive on the street, but they need a license.
They do. This is just more of like getting this would be more of that education.
We'll make it.
Making it, well, and provide us education for residents.
This is like things that can't be.
Mr. Chairman, there's a question from an attendee. Do you need to address driving on the sidewalk?
I don't think we're going to let them drive on the sidewalk, are we?
No.
I would say no, we're not going to let them.
Thank you.
A whole other issue.
Yeah.
This is for licensed vehicles that are driving on the street. They're getting a license plate through the BMV. So now again, that could temporarily happen. Like, you know, you cut over and you're on there to, you know, get some parking lot or something.
We can talk about it. I mean, if I'm 21 in Pleasant Valley, we're going to ride on the sidewalk.
I mean, you got a 2-hour meeting just for.
Yeah,
I know. That's what I'm saying. To me, it's a safety thing. I don't care where they go.
In your research, the other communities have regulations that we're talking about coming up with regulations for the operation of the golf carts on the street. I mean, other communities regulate that?
Oh, yeah. Nakata Heights regulates it.
I brought this at the last meeting.
Yeah.
So we said, and I had at the last meeting the months. But we kind of pushed that off. So we had this outline the last time. So the last time I want to say it was November to March or something like that. And we had the ordinances broken down, but I think we said no, like if it's not broke, don't fix it, something around that effect. And then we said like we just want to get the license plate so it can be inspected. So I have no problem bringing that back up. We did write it up. I'll send it to you guys again what we had written the last time.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
So yeah. I would like council to vote on that before we start this.
Not a problem. Won't be a problem.
But we should have something next month or two because of
because it's coming up.
Yeah.
And the other question becomes, do we have a need to have the legislation? Or do we make the legislation anticipating what the need is?
I will send you everything that I have from the last meeting, and then we can discuss further as you see fit. Right. You'll have it before the end of the week.
And we'll have a meeting next month, and it'll be on there. We can discuss it for an hour.
That might be a good idea. Golf carts seem to be a lengthy discussion.
All right.
I guess it is. I guess my
comrade.
Control Hunt says, but I did give everyone a letter here to the Department of Wildlife of Ohio Department of Natural Resources. So we had an individual reach out to us about requesting Control Hunt status for the City of Independence. I did research. I looked into North Royalton. I looked into Mentor, all who have Control Hunt status. What this does is it ups the harvest count from 3 to 6. This is still only those that are permitted to hunt, those bow hunting within the city that have been given a license to do so on property that has been designated by the property owner to allow them to do this. We have seen a usefulness in this program, the herd program. It has maintained herd health, safety of the motorists. I really can't think of many times where we've had any deer-related incidents while I've been here. And it does promote biological diversity in our natural areas. This is something that's embraced by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and other places. Did I, is there something over there on the other?
No, I
okay. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer them. And I do have one of our hunters here, Ed, and actually two of our hunters, Tim also hunts. Ed here, who helped bring this issue forward to us. Yes.
So can council get a list of all the addresses or areas of where these legal hunts are?
I think we can get that through them. He can get it through us. It's public record. Yes.
We get it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. He can get that. I don't see a problem with this.
Do we have to take action to do that?
Yes. This is the official letter that I'd be sending to the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. I have to send it every year in order for this to be permitted. As I said, I've gotten information from Mentor and from North Royalton. They've seen success in the program by culling some of the excess deer in their areas.
Maybe more deer here would be built through this program.
This, if all of the hunters did, it would be double what a normal. I don't have the numbers for this year because they're not due until next week. So this week I only have a little bit. So until I find out, I don't know exactly how many deers were, herded or. And
this wouldn't take effect until next season.
Correct, until next season, sir.
Can I just stay on this? As I do about, I think it's a good idea. I'll let the patients here. I won't take three. I'll only take what I can eat. So one this year, and that's all I plan to. So I know that this may increase the number a little bit, and it is a good idea because there's a lot of deer out there. There's this year, ODNR is predicting about 200,000 deer have been harvested this year in Ohio. So, and you still see them on the road running because if someone wants to take up the 6 deer, I have no problem because you say you might. You might have a son who wants, or you might have a nephew who wants to find you. Yes, sir.
So, do we track where these deer are shot at? It's specific places.
The locations are tracked. Yes.
Where do you see most of those being?
I'd have to pull that data from our secretary has that. I have how many hunters we have. I have how many have been reported for this year, but numbers don't make any sense because I don't have all that many. Like we only have 30 that have been reported to kill this year, 30 deer, but we do have 100 permits that were granted to hunters. So we have 100 permits.
Okay. Now are the people who pull the permits, are they given tags or how are they showing proof of how many deer they are actually?
They call in how many deer are how many deer that they have killed. We
on our system,
for the most part.
We got to do it just like they're hunting all the property.
Yeah, we're not out there with them when they're doing it. We check their stands, we check their deer stands, we check stuff like that. If we get a report or we get somebody saying, hey, he's done this, we can follow up on that and check. We can do trail cams, we can do stuff like that to make sure people are doing the proper thing, but we've never had any reports that people aren't. And everyone's property is voluntary, so the homeowners that own this property are giving permission. We make sure it's far enough away from populated areas, we make sure it's safe for business.
Yes, every location.
Correct, sir?
GPS, every location.
Yes, our detective goes out. To the Detective Smigola goes out to them and inspects the rigs.
Did you say there was 100
permits?
Permits?
Yes.
And that means 100 stands?
Yes, I would have to imagine
now,
that.
Some people share stands.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
I mean, about how many stands are those 100 hunters being?
Yeah, I know. My son-in-law just stopped.
I'm sorry?
Some hunters have multiple stands. Okay.
Correct.
So I have there's a resident on Eastview who his neighbor to the north bow hunts his backyard because he has the property and he's constantly finding arrows in his backyard. Misses, obviously. So what kind of safety is there?
Call us
with this.
Call us and
he'll call me and say I could have been
you know, I could have been in my backyard and I got hit by a stray bow, you know, stray arrow.
We haven't had any instance of anyone being hit with an arrow, but call us. If an arrow is in somebody else's property, we can go back and speak with that hunter and we can see if they're, you know, their skills are correct. And if they're leaving items behind, it could be also seen as littering.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is just it shouldn't be.
Or it hits a deer and the deer runs off and the arrow flies out the side of it or something. Who knows? But we can follow up.
Partway hangs out, the deer may run,
break it off,
25 yards, and it falls.
I'm just asking because they've asked me to ask these questions.
So, yeah.
Haven't. It goes through, kind of way, like through, but that's the exception.
Have them call us. We will happily address it with any of the residents and the hunter that shot the arrow. All right. Moving on. Department breakdown. This is just our police update real fast. The goal that we set when I came here in 2021 was 28 patrolmen, 28 on the road. That's 7 per shift. We are at 28. That means we have 7 per shift. That is the first time we have hit these numbers in over 10 years. So we have the most officers on the road. We're going to make an announcement on that soon in the coming months. Once they're out of FTO, the 3 that we hired, just to the public to let them know that we do have more officers on the road than we've had in 10 years. So this is a really good. This year we are expecting 1 to 2 retirements out of patrol. Special operations, the goal was 7. We are currently at 6, but we have announced a new hire test. The new hire test would put a new person in patrol. Somebody from patrol would go to special operations. We are expecting 1 retirement this year in special operations in September. Admin, that's me. The goal is 2, eventually a chief and a deputy chief. We currently have me, that's just me. So that's where we're at. We're looking really good. I really just want to thank council and the mayor for their support to the department. I think the residents are noticing it. Our officers are extremely proactive. They're doing good work. I have a few things that I want to point out to you guys that have occurred recently. But the 7 officers per shift, I'm extremely proud that we have more officers on the road now than we've had in over 10 years. This is really good, and if we need it. The city is benefiting from it. No doubt our residents are feeling it and seeing it.
And you can define technically what data stops.
Yes, sir.
To support logic behind why we're doing what we're doing.
Oh, yeah, everything. And I wish today, I know today we're rushed on time, and typically I do bring somebody with me to speak a little bit, like just from their own perspective. It's sometimes better to hear from the officers and stuff like that. Just the overall impact that the officers and the supervisors and the response has been very positive. Morale is very high due to council and the mayor's support of staffing.
You know, too bad you couldn't show that one video.
The reverse of traffic? I just didn't want to take up too much time today.
But how did we find it? How did we catch it?
I was talking beforehand. So our officers do proactive looks in the residential areas. They're looking for suspicious vehicles. A lot of times what we've seen is criminals will come in a stolen car. So they're stealing a car in another community. They show up in the stolen car so they can commit crime and get away with free and clear of our flock system for the most part, because we can't track who owns a car when they're in a stolen car. So we're looking for anything that's out of the ordinary. 2 o'clock in the morning, an officer sees a vehicle. He's got a broken out driver's side window. It looks suspicious. He gets behind it. He's doing a little bit more. The guy starts trying to do eluding moves. I'm onto something. He tries to light him up. The guy goes reverse of traffic. Our officer was brave enough to try to, his gut reaction was to try to take him out, as in pit maneuver. Not, you know, hopefully take him out in the safest way possible, but a pit maneuver would be taking out his back tires to crash him into a wall so that it didn't go head on into an innocent motorist. Couldn't catch up to him. The car eventually did crash. No major injuries. We got the person several felonies. He was wanted in 4 or 5 other, don't quote me on that, but it's about 4 or 5 other. I know Cleveland Heights is one, County, Avon, and I think something else. Lakewood. He's a career criminal, and our guys being proactive, looking for those things, having the officers on the road because we're staffing the shifts led to that. That's what led to that. And, you know, I feel in this day and age, other cities are like, oh my gosh, we can't find people. We're creating an environment where people want to work here.
Yeah.
and we're getting the best of the best. They're meeting the standards that we expect.
Were there criminal tools in the vehicle?
Thank you.
What do you think his intent was?
Intent was to break into other cars and do items like that. So criminal tools could be, he could be one of those guys that just goes door to door and try, you know, who left their car door unlocked in one of our neighborhoods, which is a favorite pastime for many.
Yeah.
You know, who left their items in the car unprotected. So we got him before he did anything. That's good. And that car was stolen. So unfortunately, it was completely totaled. So when the car person came up to like, how's my car? You didn't watch the news, did you?
About the 35 department, about how many live in the city, do you think?
I can get you that number later on. I mean, a lot of them also have a deep connection to the city. So I can give you an example. Scott Sedlock went to high school here. He lived here. His parents still live here. Right. He doesn't live in the city currently.
You count.
But you can count them. So, I mean, yeah, those are the things that we want to look at here. A lot of them also, the new hires, were surrounding communities. So one went to Garfield Heights High School. Like, they're very familiar with this community. One was a Valley View policeman. So I think the roots are very strong here. A lot of them, and I can be frank with you, have looked at houses here. The problem is it's very hard to buy a house in this community. You know, they're either very expensive and they're outside of the price range, or they're, you know, a major fixer-upper. So our officers are trying to even move into the city. So if anybody has any tips or, you know, information, I know guys are looking. So they're big parts of the community, or they get the rec memberships. Like our jailer lives in Brunswick. Him and his wife come up here to the rec center every weekend. So I think we're definitely, once you're here, you can't stay away.
Thank you.
Yeah, they are. My wife and I, we come up to the rec. So body cameras. We received a grant for $59,107 from the state. We are looking for GTEC body cameras. Those are the body cameras right there. Body cameras would connect with our in-car dash cam video system. We are slowly transitioning to GTEC dash cameras. We have two installed. We have six in our Sallyport. We are just trying to wait on a few more pieces. You know how it is with shipping of all of our parts and pieces. These are top-of-the-line gear. The accessibility to the company has been flawless. Motorola has had a lot of issues with helping people with problems when they support. They have a lot of support problems. This company is spot on with everything. They're very communicative. They help us out with everything. The $59,000 will cover the cost of every body camera that we are looking to purchase and cloud storage for 2 years. We are looking to move in to current technology. Our old technology, you had a thumb drive inside of our cruisers and you had to go out and manually remove it. You had to put it in. Like, it could be destroyed. It is not a good system. Now, when a car pulls in, it immediately downloads the video. We have faster video. We can get it for the media. We can look at video immediately. We don't have only one person that can pull a video out of a car. This is going to bring us forward. The body cameras will also allow us to have live look, which would mean if there's a serious incident and the body cameras are on, a commanding officer can tune in to the video while it's live and see what are the officers doing, where's the threat, where are these people. Without having to worry about the radio traffic, they can actually see this. It's one of the only cameras that has this technology currently in place. You guys did speak to this company. They did come to one of the city council meetings last year, and that's how we started doing the dash cameras. The city will have to put the money up front to buy the body cameras. Once the state has greenlit the funds, I will be looking for council to approve the purchase of the body cameras in the cloud for the $59,000. Once they are purchased and we can show the receipts and they're here, the state will reimburse us fully for that amount of money.
Chris, a couple things on this. They've made a very impressive presentation. What does it cost to maintain what does it cost to actually, I know what it costs to buy it, but what does it cost to maintain it? What is it per, you know, officer, do you think?
These have a 5-year warranty. So there's nothing for, we don't have to buy pieces or parts or anything.
Software, so we have to pay a maintenance fee, right, or something over here.
Yeah, the cloud storage for all of our tapes are going to be between $22,000 to $25,000 a year.
For the whole thing?
For the whole thing. Yeah, it's $35 per camera per month.
Okay, that's what I was asking. And then the second part of it is this, where is the cloud stored? Is it at a server in Ohio? Do we know where?
No, it's not in Ohio, but it is multiple layers on top of layers. So if one goes down, there's backup layers of technology. The big problem with having a server by yourself and having it within your station, as we all remember, if we get hacked, that's it. That's the only place that has it. So if all of our videos are gone, we're breaking a retention schedule. If they lose our videos, that's the problem. Like the person that says that we lost our videos would have to go to GTEC and, you know, look to that problem.
And it's all within the United States. It's not.
It's all in the United States. GTEC is a United States company. And that's one of the things that, you know, with them being around and having local representatives, that was very attractive to us. When you look at bigger companies, sometimes you don't know. They get very skatey about it, when you, especially when you call them, you're like not really confident you're speaking, you know, to people that, you know, around.
Is that going to be a mandatory piece of equipment I have to do
that? It will. Every officer will have a body cam. The officers want the body cameras. They came to me early on and they were like, this is something we really wanted. Would you be willing to look at it? Very respectful about it. They're like, we get it. And I'm like, of course. I've worked in two communities. I remember in Cleveland Heights when we got them, I was the first officer upstairs at the chief's office. Like, hey, I'll be your guinea pig. Give me a body camera, sir. I said, why do you want this? Protects me. Protects me in court. Shows that I'm doing my job. I can play it. Here you go. You want to see the drunk person? And play the tape, and I'll just sit back and let the video speak for itself. It defends our officers and stops frivolous complaints. And you know, I'm not saying that some complaints aren't founded and we would look into those, but I can tell you personally, I've been here, people come up to the window and they'll just make something up. And we have to, it's sometimes a scramble to be like, that didn't happen. Now we have the body camera, now we got it. If you want to make a frivolous complaint and it's untrue, you can be charged criminally for making that complaint. We have the proof in the pudding here on camera. So we hold our officers to a high standard, but we do need to protect them from those type of complaints for their own peace of mind. So body cameras incoming, my goal is before July of this year. That is the goal. Equipment. Every officer in this department is outfitted with one of the brand new vests that we all talked about. Thank you again for your support on that. They're lightweight, their backs feel good, and they fit nicely. They look professional. All canine units have a bulletproof vest. Thanks to an approval by the mayor, we've ordered two new lasers. We are trying to, remember when I first started, I showed you the old ones that we had that were giant bricks. We're trying to get the newer ones. They're lightweight. They are better technology. They work in rain. They work in snow. They're less likely to have errors when they're looking for speeders. We've had a few companies come out. We found one. They're really good. Introduce our brand new baseball hats. First time we all have matching baseball hats in our police department. You can also notice that this is the new bell that we have on there. So all of the officers have been issued those. They are flex fit, form fitting hats. The officers love them. It's very popular already.
These are the duty hats.
These are duty hats. These are not Class A hats. These are just wearing on the road. Class A is still the 8-point hats. Coats is something else we've never really replaced in here. That is the only last big purchase this year for uniforms. It will be caught up. This type of me buying all this stuff is not going to be an ongoing thing. I'm just catching up from years of it not happening. Every vest, you know, every coat is different. Guys look mismatched. The point is we should be looking professional. The public sees us. They see us first. We need to look how they expect us to in the right way. Vehicles, Dennis and I are doing everything we can to get our cruisers. We've reached out to two different dealerships. They haven't even started production. Blue light camera update. Again, I know this is a shorter meeting. We can talk about this in the future. We did not get the grant for the blue light cameras. We're looking into alternatives and other grants to try to get that program off of the ground.
But the cost of it's not astronomical.
It's not astronomical, sir.
Well, I think it's something that we're going to look at.
I'm sure for the future.
About the grant, I think the city can
decide. We're still going to look for any grant that we can. I want to announce that we've officially have a date for our Teen Safe Driver program, April 30th, 10 a.m. to 2. If you have a 16, 17, 18, or 19-year-old, it says under 18, but that's not true. 18 or 19 years old, there it is underneath. It says residents age 16 to 19. Or if you have a child, even if they don't live here, that's between the ages of 16 and 19, as long as you're a resident and they have a valid driver's license, they can come to this class. We're going to do mock traffic stops. We're going to teach them how to change tire, battery, what happens during a road rage incident, what happens if you were in an accident, what information do you have to provide to the person that hit you, and vice versa. People don't ever get to learn these things. We're limiting them to 30. We're going to see how it goes. We're going to put people through OVI, field sobriety tests, everything you can think of. It's going to be a four-hour class, and I think it's free for our residents. We're very proud of this. Kevin Rapicki put this together for me.
This one could be for adults. It would be a great program. But.
Yeah. Unfortunately, 16 to 19. Yeah. If you try to sneak in, Dave, we're going to know.
Yeah, that's for sure.
What's up, fellow young people? Training. I want to thank Steve Riga and the fire department. They've been instrumental in helping us on two major training aspects. Narcan. All of our officers now carry Narcan in their cruisers. This is the element that can save somebody that is overdosing through fentanyl. Not just a user, it can also save a policeman. Let us remember that if we're searching a car and an officer becomes it, this is something on hand that we could save an officer's life. Steve and his team trained our officers in this. I gave you guys all a copy of a report. I'm happy to say in the month of January, after 1 month of training, we already are attributed to saving an individual's life by using Narcan. One of our officers utilized Narcan after their training with the fire department, and this is one of the success stories of it. We had two overdoses in January, one of which the person did not survive 3 days later. We did use the Narcan, but it's out there. We're using it. It's a great tool that we have. Further, Steve and his team is putting us through a CPR and first aid, a four-hour block, much more in detail than the lunchtime ones that they're doing for the city. We're getting a higher level to make sure if we're first on scene, we want to be able to stabilize so we're a good partner to the fire department who helps us out so much. We just want to make sure we're bridging that gap. Seconds matter.
Steve, to your team, kudos. Great guys, the guy that came over and their experience, their expertise with City Hall staff, various departments, it's invaluable. They really have the right demeanor, they explain well, they give real life examples. They're just phenomenal ambassadors for the department, as well as the safety that they share and educate us all about.
Thank you, Mark.
We're still doing CIT training. In fact, I have an officer going through it right now.
Yep. Without compromising tactics, if it does, don't answer the question. But do we routinely take the drug sniffing dogs down to the hotels to see if there's anything going on?
The cars. We'll do the cars. But again, we don't let the dogs inside the cars anymore.
Yeah.
No, because, you know, people literally like have drugs on the floorboards. Like it's everywhere. Like it's wild. If you want to Google, like just recently OSP had a stop where people had 2 pounds of meth on the back floorboard. Like they had to scoop it with an ice brush. It's crazy. So we're still focused on training. Training is not going to stop this year. We want to make sure our guys get the best training and they can train each other. We have two people going through BJJ, that's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, through Gracie. They're going to become instructors. We're going to be teaching Jiu-Jitsu to our officers so they know how to handle themselves in a hand-to-hand combat situation. Nowadays, it seems more and more that officers are reliant on their tools. Tools fail. Tasers don't always work. People panic. We want to make sure they can handle themselves in a ground situation. So just by doing this, one of the guys already joined Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu school, and we already have four guys that off-duty, they go and they do this together. So it's catching on. We're definitely fostering an environment where people want to train and learn and move on. We have a pepper ball and taser instructor classes coming up. We have four guys going to that, two and two. And we have an officer going to physical fitness instructor. We're going to use him internally to help come up with some workout plans for our officers. And also they can put any new hires through the push-up, sit-ups, mile and a half run. They'll be state certified to do it. He also has a degree in exercise science, and he's going to come up with some stretching routines for some of our officers to, you know, peer-to-peer help them out to make sure, you know, if they have any, you know, to prevent injuries. In the month of January, we seized 8 guns. This is proactive. Why do we really want to thank you guys for the extra officers? We're out there. We got 8 guns in January. That's with the new law. that allows people to be carrying guns without permits. That's 8 guns seized. This is one of the guns that were recovered from a drug dealer out of the Red Room. This was in their back seat. It's 22 assault rifle. That is currently in our evidence. This allowing to have more guys on the road encourages proactive policing. They look for suspicious behavior before it gets to our residents, before it turns bad. This was an example of doing that. If you checked on our social media, we had great success with our task force. We were one of the members of the fentanyl seizure, over 2 kilos. That was 88 pounds, I believe, of fentanyl taken off the street worth $5.2 million. Giving us the resources that you guys have given us has led to a lot of success, and I thank you for that. Turn it over in case somebody else has to go.
I got a couple questions.
Well, sorry.
Do police carry EpiPens?
No, we do not have EpiPens. We are training our school resource officers to utilize EpiPens so they can use the ones that are in the school.
I have a question. The rifle that you showed was a 22 rimfire, correct?
I know it's a 22.
Okay.
I'm the worst person for you to ask me a gun question to.
It's like a 22 long rifle.
Okay.
Big difference between an AR-15 caliber, okay?
Sure.
And a 22 and ARs, okay? You can change the uppers and lowers, except the theory is wrong. Actually, a 9mm is more dangerous than a 22. So, and then I personally have a problem with being called an assault weapon. Okay, because if I went and assaulted someone and killed someone with a rock and smashed their head, that would be an assault weapon. I use that rock as an assault weapon. You can say the same thing about a knife. You can say the same thing about the hammer that Paul Pelosi was attacked.
I think we could agree that a drug dealer with that weapon is bad no matter what weapon
yes,
it is.
Yes, I agree with you.
So I think we can settle on that, whatever it was called, a drug dealer that's operating with drugs in his vehicle, which he also had cocaine and fentanyl, shouldn't be having that weapon and is a danger to society, regardless of what he has.
You mentioned that you're training the SROs for EpiPens?
To be able to utilize an EpiPen.
Right.
So the schools have access to it. I've spoken to Wheeler and the fire department that while we are training our officers in first aid and CPR, the two SROs will be going through a higher level of that, just again, to be a good intermediary if they're the first ones that are on scene. So if they have to do an EpiPen, if they have to do something else of that nature, they're confident in their skills.
We're working in concert with school.
Correct.
We have two. Tell me about the SROs. Where do they go to? Where are they stationed?
We have one SRO in the high school. We have one SRO in the elementary school. They're both full-time officers that are there every day. They both share responsibilities in the middle school. As you know, I'm just saying this for the record, not to be condescending. We all know that the high school is walkable from the middle school. So he does walk back and forth, but our elementary school SRO also goes in there. They develop programming, so currently, I don't want to spoil too much because I'd rather it be done, but our SRO in the high school is coming up with a conditioning program. He's going to help with some early morning workouts for kids. He's going to be there with them to do that. And we're working on, there's one other program, I forgot about it, but they're working on programs with the schools, with the kids.
And so our team, and they'll... And they're Alice trained, everybody's in terms of...
They will be Alice trained.
Everyone that's in our department.
Everyone that's in the schools. We are... Okay, let me correct that. I know where you're saying, sorry. All of our officers are Alice trained. We want Alice instructors. So the two SROs are going to be Alice instructors. So that means they can teach the schools. Kevin Rapicki is an SRO and is an ALICE instructor, so he's still doing that for us, but the goal is eventually both the SROs will just be the instructors. Everyone's trained.
And these SROs will be in the schools for how many years, these two guys, if I realistically?
Whenever they're, as long as they're needed.
So we're signing two SROs continuously during the school system?
Currently, the city is fully funding two SROs to the schools.
Okay. Thank you.
Just so you know, Mayor and Chief, now, the governor proposed in his budget, should it pass, that the state of Ohio would pay for those SROs.
That would be great.
With our two SROs, are we bringing two full-time before we mentioned?
No.
Cover there?
No, that, the 37 is with the two SROs. So if, and if it ever happens in the state or somebody picks up any of the costs, we could eventually look at adding like a 38th member to our department, and there are usages that we could use with them, community-based, for sure, that we want, you know, to expand upon. But, I mean, they're both highly trained. They're going to a training, I'm spoiling a lot of things, I'm sorry, you gotta tune into our Facebook page. They're going to a training on Friday with Flock to show how Flock can help the schools. So they're gonna be utilizing our cameras to make sure, again, if there's a threat to our schools, how do we use the Flock cameras? How do they put information into our Flock cameras? So we're using our resources. Having the two officers there full-time is great. It's a great gateway.
So you're saying that we will be able to track with our cameras, we'll be able to, like, with our Flock system, if in fact there's an incident and they get into a vehicle, or there's any incident with the vehicle, we'll be able to track them throughout the city?
Yes. Or let's say there's a dangerous person on the loose that's looking to go over it, and we know that, we can enter their license plate in and we would know where they hit well before they get to the school. So, and that's where eventually the blue light cameras are, where we want to put one at Sea League and Brecksville. In case they miss the other ones, we get them well before they get in.
In the event of a catastrophic situation, and the SRO, what's their protocol in terms of if there's someone who's in the school?
Take out the threat immediately. So having them, you know, that they're the first line. They're not waiting outside. We've done trainings already with that. Last year, we did a school shooting scenario with all of our officers, every officer. And it was, you just take out the threat. And we used a simunition, which is like paint rounds. They hurt. You get shot. It doesn't feel good. But we were shooting each other. Then we also did further training with the fire department on working collaboratively to help victims during a school shooting. We're doing another school shooting scenario this year. We're not going to stop doing that. So yeah, it's take out the threat. They're the first line of defense, and they're not going to wait.
Yeah, just want to do that.
Yeah. And both of our SROs, too, and I think we've spoken on this, have 20 years within this department. They have deep connections. I think if I say the word Jim Green, everyone's going to smile in some capacity because everyone has a story with Jim Green. You know, Troy Keegan is very well respected. He teach, you know, he knows a lot of the stuff. He has two high school daughters himself. So then we're going to use them a little bit differently than we've used in the past. So for home days, they are expected to be, Troy will be at the rides. That's where the high school students are. You know the high school kids. You're there. We now have a connection. They know him by name. He knows the kids by name. So we're developing relationships that are very important to our department.
Thank you. We'll talk between now and home day. I don't think the high school kids dominate the ride area.
Yeah, that's true.
Some of them are there.
Oh, Green's there too. Yeah. So I don't have a ton of stuff, but I know I have some legislation coming up for next week, and I'm just giving you an opportunity to get any questions on it. One of the things is our annual City of Cleveland water fees, which there isn't anything surprising there. I send them the number of hydrants we have, and we pay the bill on that usage. The other thing is, our annual CERT, COG dues for the Southwest Council of Governments. That's our CERT team, which is our technical rescue, and then also SED, which is the police side. The only thing significant there is the police are doing a one-time fee increase of $5,500 for a building that they're erecting to store some of their vehicles. So that was the change there. And then the other thing that I have, which is probably more of interest, is that I'm looking to change the charter to increase our maximum number of lieutenants from 5 to 7, and then to decrease the number of firefighters from 23 down to 21. And then from there, we looked at promoting 2 more firefighters to lieutenant. That will allow us to have 2 lieutenants on each operational shift. So in the absence of one lieutenant, there'll be the other one there. We'll have only one off at a time is what we are striving for, and then we'll have more oversight on each shift. Currently, we're using an OIC or an acting officer, which is okay, but they just don't have the same. You know, when you're in that officer's position, you get more authority. It's continuous. You have greater responsibilities, and that's the other component is we're trying to get more
people up to speed for when we have the eventual administrative turnover in about January 2007. So it's less than 4 years now. So it's a good opportunity to get more people in that administrative position. So I don't know if anybody had any questions on that.
Are you going somewhere?
Am I going somewhere? Eventually, all.
Yeah. Can you describe your chain of command? How does it work?
So we have three 40-hour administrative staff. That's myself, my assistant chiefs, and we have a 40-hour lieutenant that does nothing but fire prevention. Okay. So then operationally on our three shifts that we have, they're there for 24 hours and 48 hours off. We'll have two officers for what would be six firefighters. So with people off, that might seem like a lot, but when one officer's off, you can have as many as anywhere from six to five firefighters that he's supervising. There would be times when there's two firefighters off and there's more officers there, but in most cases on an active fire and stuff like that, it's better to have more officers on scene to oversight to oversee those positions. So, but ultimately, it gives better coverage for the community in terms of having administrative staff running those incidents.
Thank you.
So I didn't know if there was any other questions about that. So.
And then that's on legislation.
Yes, it is. So I guess, you know, if there was any future discussions that we need to
have. Do you have to eliminate the other positions?
Well, we're not really eliminating them. We've always had a buffer. In other words, we've been able to hire more than we operationally staff, just in case it's like, hey, you know, we have two guys going to be retiring, let's hire two in preparation for that. So we go a little bit higher and then we reduce back down. So I felt that by adding the two officers, we need to reduce the number of firefighters. And actually, once we promote the two, we'll only have 18 operational firefighters, and then we'll have the six officers that are on shift. So we're still allowing up to 21. If, you know, when we start to go, we can hire some people ahead of time, so there isn't a gap there. It takes a good year for somebody to get up to speed and know that position. So that's why I kind of correspondingly made the adjustment.
This isn't going to handcuff you if you needed it.
Right, yeah. So, as far as the things that we're doing, you know, the fire department has changed over its patient recording system. We kind of had to do this. Things were phasing out with the current system that we're using. So, basically, it's our electronic system that we use to track patients and enter all the information. Eventually, our fire system will go to this new program as well because our current system was bought out. You know, transition to that. So we kind of went ahead and transitioned on the EMS side to this new company, and eventually we'll move the fire to that as well. It went really smoothly, really no hiccups there. It's still something we're learning, but it's looking like it's going to be a good fit. Grant opportunities, I'm looking into an EFG grant right now. I've got to get it in by the end of the week. I've got the primary almost done. We're looking at trying to get some funding for medical tests for our firefighters. Cancer is a huge issue in the fire service, so we're looking at doing some basically cancer screening. There's some exams out there that can help identify very early on to get early treatment and keep the employee on the job longer. So, you know, we do have some hurdles and we go for these grants as far as our budgets and things like that, so I'm trying to see if we can get it, but we'll see where that goes. We also have a Safety Kids Day that's being put on by our Northeast Ohio Fire Prevention Association and also our Northeast Ohio Safety Educators Association. What this is in Summit County, they did a huge, it's for kids that are homeschooled and they don't get the advantage of the firefighters that come in and the police officers that come in to educate the students in the schools. At home, they don't get that. So they had a Safety Day, it was put on by the State Fire Marshal. And what they do is try to bring all those people in the county there to get that education on one particular day. It's about a six-hour day. Everybody shares with their educators, bringing them in to help train or educate the kids. So this year we're doing it in Summit, Cuyahoga County. We're going to host it here at the Community Services Center and outside of the Kiwanis Pavilion. It looks to be like it'll be a pretty good day. It's for all kids in Cuyahoga County. And again, we're getting help from all the other communities to put that on. So it should be a pretty well-attended event and a pretty good social media event as well. So
when is that?
That's going to be on May 31st. So, and then we'll have more to follow on that. But that's probably one of the bigger things we have coming up.
Okay.
Outside of that, we've got a couple of part-time candidates in the processing system right now that we're looking at, so maybe in another month or so we'll be looking to square them in. Right now we only have two part-time candidates that are part-time employees. One of them is going to be retiring, I believe it in March. He's been here for about 20 years and he's just ready to move on. That's Jim Laparo. He's done a great job over the years. He's a resident for a very long time, so sorry to see him go, but we are looking for some replacements there.
What level of firefighting certification do the part-timers need?
They have to have the same qualifications as full-time. So do you feel that, you know, part-time firefighters going out to our residents need to have the same capabilities, same knowledge and training, and that's just how we approach that. Our aerial truck is going to be going in for some repairs. It's just, you know, it's almost 20 years old, or a little over 20 years old, actually. So our waterway needs the seals replaced, so that will be coming up. I don't have it scheduled yet, but it would be taking about a week. So that's probably one of the bigger repairs coming up. And then we are still looking into our all-terrain vehicle. They're starting to open up custom builds now, where before you just got what you got, what was available. Just like the police cars, that seems like all these vehicles are pretty hard to get nowadays. So we're looking, we're still working on that.
Chief, could you give some background? A few weeks back, there was a hotel on Rockside that didn't have adequate sprinklers working. Was that a random check-in? I mean,
well, no. The state does come up and go through our hotels. That hotel was not in compliance with some of their corrective actions that they were told to correct. At that point, they viewed it as an imminent danger. So they basically shut them down until those were corrected, and they did get corrected rather quickly. So
it wasn't just a stop and you've got them.
No, those were scheduled appointments. It's kind of rare. We'll stop in if there's a complaint of some type that way. But if a person standing there has an issue with something, we might stop and check it out. But those are scheduled inspections by the state fire marshal.
How many people stay at that hotel? It doesn't seem like, if you look at the parking lot, there's many cars there at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't know that.
The occupancy tax that it pays is probably the lowest of all the hotels that the city has.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to comment about the article about the Sycamore Hill Drive Park. Compared to it was on the Independence Day magazine. You know that since August, I've spoken several times about safety and environmental issues because it was out of place in Parliament. An article written by Mr. Pinnock of the Independence Day magazine, February 23, President of the Club, Ray Quinn, is quoted as saying, "The club creates a safety plan that complies with the standards of the NRA. Mr. Quinn is further quoted as saying that it is nearly impossible to reach the homes and nearly impossible for ammunition to leave the range. Rule number two of the NRA safety standards states, know what is behind your target and always make sure a stray shot will be safely stopped. Mr. Quinn's statement makes it clear that it is possible for ammunition to leave the range and reach homes and vehicles traveling on hillside. Sycamore Hills Rifle Club is not compliant with rule number two of the NRA. Mr. Quinn also stated that they keep the firearms pointed at the earth when not in use, and use chamber indicators when not in use. However, chamber indicators are not used when chambering ammunition and when clearing a chamber of ammunition in the event of misfires. As stated by Mr. Quinn, the rifles are pointed at the ground. However, the picture provided by Ms. Bednar is proof that a misfire during chambering of ammunition or clearing a chamber of ammunition is extremely dangerous because of the rocks and the water. While I hope that the SHRC members wouldn't intentionally shoot at any of the hard surfaces or the water pictured in the magazine, it is a fact that a shot may be fired inadvertently because of a slam fire during chambering or during extraction of ammunition due to a misfire. NRA rule number three states, never shoot at a hard surface or water. Your shot will glance off, ricochet, and injure someone. 39 rounds of 30 caliber bullet with a weight of 180 grains produces 1 pound of lead. 113 rounds of a 5.56 or a 22 caliber bullet with a weight of 62 grains produces 1 pound of lead. The fact that the SHRC shoots along the creek bed has not proven that any of the lead that they deposited in the ground or that has leached into the water system over the last 94 years has been extracted raises concerns that this site may be contaminated with lead. NRA rule number 4 states, never damage the environment. Another picture in the magazine shows two rounds of ammunition. One is what appears to be a .30 caliber and the other a .22 caliber of 5.56. The size of the ammunition pictured is irrelevant since the 5.56 ammunition travels at an average speed of 800 feet per second faster than most .30 caliber ammunitions. The additional speed of the 5.56 ammo makes it extremely dangerous and has been proven to be effective. Deadly round is one of the reasons the cartridge is used by our military personnel. The cover in Independence Day magazine states that the Sycamore Hills Rifle Club defends its 94 history within the city. How could such a statement be made? To defend any position requires opposition. There was no opposition in the magazine articles. My quotes in the magazine are inaccurate. Ms. Bednar never approached me for an interview. I never posted anything related to the extensive documentation that I made public. As I have stated previously, the landscape of the area has changed significantly. Most, if not all, the homes within the line of fire and within the standing area were not there 94 years ago, including the homes of Twin Creeks Development. Hillside Road may not have been there 94 years ago, but if so, traffic has significantly increased over the last 94 years. The rifle rate claim states the LHRC primarily uses is the AR-15. The AR-15 rifle did not exist 94 years ago. Sidewalks along Hillside Road that were put in 2 years ago did not exist. The safety and environmental issues related to the operations of the SHRC should be set forth in a public forum with a notice to all residents. There is no justifiable reason for anyone to discharge a high-powered rifle within city limits. It is not safe. As our elected officials, I leave you with one question. Is it worth the risk of serious injury or death to our residents and guests so that Ray Klain, his friends, can entertain themselves with modified military weapons? Thank you. I don't know if any of you understand how modified these rifles can be. They can be completely built by themselves. Okay, these safety features that these rifles come from a factory, they can take the barrel, change the barrel, change the sight, they can change the entire trigger and they do change the trigger assembly to shoot CMP matches so that the second stage pull is extremely sensitive, which makes these guns, they won't meet the safety standards of the manufacturers. So this is a dangerous situation. It really is. I wouldn't be pushing this if it wasn't, if I didn't truly believe that it was. Okay? And thank you.
Thank you.
They were originally on the agenda, they just had a time restriction.
Yeah, time restriction. I mean, it's 10 after already.
Yeah.
I think it's a longer meeting, because it was in 10 minutes. So.
Can we put that on the next meeting then?
Well, I think the next meeting's going to be golf cards.
Well, I know, but I'm saying
we need to take care of this. Guns and golf cards.
Guns and golf cards.
Yeah, because in the ensuing time, I had two individual residents contact. One that previously shot at the range and said he is no longer shooting at the range. He goes to Camp Perry or someplace else because he was concerned about it. I spent a lot of time listening to his concerns related to the range and its location. The second person is a person that lived down on Brandley Drive, and his comment related to the fact that at all sorts of random times when there is discharge at the range, I would assume because of the shape of the valley along there, straight across from Rio Negro, that they are hearing the discharges at all sorts of different times. So that was a concern that he expressed to me. So
I pass those along to the rest of the committee.
I'm here on my own.
Anything from a PNR was, if the range is not adhered to the general accepted standards, then the range owner may be liable in civil court from whoever's making the complaint, so they can seek civil action. So I spoke to ODNR, I did my due diligence, you know, every which way. I have a ton of email correspondence between us. They did not agree to come to speak. I asked them to come to speak. They originally said they would speak at this meeting, and then they did not. And he said he would forward my request to speak at this meeting to their law department, and they never responded back. I did ask, you know, if this was enforceable by the police department and us, and he said no. And I have that email from them, and it's, you know, under ODNR, the standards are under ODNR Division of Wildlife, but this is handled civilly, is what is concerned. It is what he stated, and this was from, the outdoor education supervisor, who I was directed to from the chief of ODNR, Kendra Walker, who she did call me, because, trust me, it took me forever to get a hold of somebody. Nobody was calling me back. And that was me being chief. Like, I was like, will somebody please call me? And eventually somebody must have said, some lunatic chief was complaining, and she didn't call me and said, okay, this guy will call you, and he did. And that's as far as we got.
There is one.
Well, I gotta stop.
I know.
I gotta stop because we've got to move forward. Vern needs to talk. We need to move forward because there's a planning commission act.
But you should look at where you close statement, because there's also preliminary city on it. It clearly goes through there.
All right, are you ready?
Thank you, Chairman. I just passed out a one-page sheet where, in December, council passed the final amendment to the 2022 annual appropriations ordinance 2022-165. And in January, Maggie and I going through the final numbers in preparation for closing, and our internal documents had, there's a lot of numbers backing up these numbers because there's a lot of sub accounts in these departments. And our documents add up to the same numbers on here. We realized, though, that at the December amendment, just in the recreation department only, we asked you to appropriate $1.963 million for wages, salaries, and benefits, and $485,000 for all other expenses, totaling that $2.448 million there. We needed to be the numbers at the bottom, still totaling the same $2.448 million, so no change in the recreation department budget, no change in the general fund, no change in the total appropriations. It's just a mixture between the two categories. It's kind of like if we asked you to appropriate a dollar last December and said, hey, we need six dimes in the one category and we need eight nickels in the other, we realize now we needed kind of eight dimes in the one and four nickels in the other. It still totals a dollar. We just needed to change the allocation within the department. And so I have a proposed motion at the bottom there if anybody's got any questions or that. But again, it's no change to the recreation department appropriation, no change to the general fund appropriation, no change to the total appropriation. It's just the mixture between the allocation between those two categories within the recreation department. We're asking for the bottom numbers to be approved.
So what does all the other recreation department?
That would be their chlorine, their concessions, anything else other than their payroll, their medical insurance, and retirement of the big three.
And we're going to have enough to cover all those expenses with the 227?
Yeah. This is really more of an internal housekeeping issue. We just want to just be. So like we swear with the auditors and say, hey, we just got any nice and cautious.
So it's more.
Yeah, it's until last year, right? Yeah, it's 22. But we're at this first time we've had to get together since our January council meeting, January Saturday meeting got canceled, and we haven't had any other meetings, I don't think, so. Just asking if council would look favorably on this.
So do we have to, fix this at the next council meeting?
I'm just saying, we could do it by a motion.
Motion, we said Brian's role.
Today?
We can do it today, right?
Yeah, he said that anytime council gets together and there's a majority there and it's an open public meeting and minutes are taken, you can take any action you want, so.
I'll make the motion.
Chris will make.
I'll make the motion approve.
I'll second that motion.
Can we have that, what that motion says at the bottom? Just read it off, please.
Yeah, for the record.
A motion to approve the amendment to ordinance 2022-165, namely on the recreation line of the general fund appropriating $2,220,500 for wages, salaries, and fringe benefits instead of $1,963,000, and appropriating $227,800 for all other recreational departments expenses instead of $485,300.
I'll second that one. Want to call the roll, Debbie, so I'll move.
Sure. Walt Chanowitz?
Yes.
Grindel?
Yes.
DeGeronimo?
Yes.
Narducci?
Yes.
Tracus?
Aye.
Babirka?
Yes.
Tagliati?
Yes.
Thank you, everybody. Sorry for timing of it, but it's what it is.
Hey, it's 5:15 on the dot, and it should do it. Does anybody have anything else in front of this planning or safety committee meeting? If not, motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
You can.
Aye.
Aye.
Pose?
Second.
To the.